This week on Making Contact.
We were kidnapped, carjacked at gunpoint by plainclothes police in one of the scariest moments of my life.
I have to serve for 3 years with hard labor in the jail.
Women are gaining influence as leaders throughout the world, fighting for peace, justice, the environment, and civil society. In this program, we profile two international changemakers dedicated to nonviolent civil disobedience and resistance. Medea Benjamin is a U.S. activist taking activism to new heights as co-founder of the group Code Pink. And Saw Myat Mar is a Burmese activist who has worked closely with Nobel Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi to establish Burma's National League for Democracy. I'm Sandina Robbins, your host this week on Making Contact. This program is a special collaboration with the Women Rising radio series. Medea Benjamin struck out on her own early in her life to learn about how the world worked. What she saw shaped her politics and her future activism, challenging her to create her own unique viewpoint.
There have been defining moments, one of which was when I was in Guatemala trying to help poor women feed their kids better. And I pulled up at this beautiful lake, Atitlan, and saw a big truck full of bananas, dump the bananas into the lake and the kids jumping out to try to grab them before they went to the bottom. And I sat there pondering, you know, why would anybody throw these bananas away when kids are starving here? Made me start scratching beneath the surface and realize that there was such a thing called effective demand, that demand from a hungry child didn't mean anything if you didn't have the money to back it up, and that corporations at that time, United Fruit, were more interested in keeping the price of bananas high than in feeding hungry kids. So I went back to college to study economics to try to learn how the world works and why weren't starving kids an effective demand. And I knew about Milton Friedman and the Chicago School of Economics and how they said that basically the only purpose of corporations is to make profits. And I saw a very stilted view of the world that didn't take into account that there were starving children, and my goal in life was to do something so that there weren't starving children. So I went to the New School for Economics precisely because they had a political economy course that didn't accept the traditional economic viewpoint. And it was from a Marxist perspective. It was about people's labor. And I never quite bought into the rigidity of the Marxist view either. So I guess I had to learn and make a path for myself of a more humanist kind of economics. I get these counter-protesters who come and they say, you know, she's a communist, Fidel Castro-loving pinko. I laugh because I was kicked out of Cuba for not following the communist line.
Medea joined forces with her husband, Kevin Danaher, Kristen Muller, and other activists to create Global Exchange, an effort to transform the prevailing economic model and to get ordinary people involved in global issues.
We take them around the world to see firsthand what's going on. We set up stores that are a model of fair trade. We help start the whole fair trade label in the United States. We also focus on the negative practices of U.S. corporations, whether it's sweatshops to automobiles that don't give us the kind of fuel efficiency we should have. And we focus on government policy, trying to change that policy. We come up with models then that are sustainable environmentally, that are worker-friendly, and that really have the long-term health of people and the planet at its heart. So we're very excited about the growth of the fair trade model and how in a crisis situation that we're in today, where the cost of oil, for example, is just going to go up and up, these kind of alternatives are not only going to be sought out, they're going to be absolutely necessary. So it's been a 20-year beautiful ride with Global Exchange.
While working to transform the world's economic system, Medea has also been active in the politics of the Green Party in the U.S., running against Dianne Feinstein for a Senate seat from California in 2000. But when 2001 rolled around, and with it 9/11, Medea's activism shifted into an emergency mode.
After the U.S. had invaded Afghanistan, I had been to Afghanistan when the bombs were dropping. I saw the collateral damage in terms of innocent people being killed to avenge the lives of other innocent people, and felt devastated that that wasn't even entering into the political discussion in the United States. It was all about us and the tragedy that happened to us, and not about the tragedy that we were then perpetrating on other people as a result of that. I was feeling pretty in need to be around other people that cared about the planet. So I decided to go to this retreat, and it was in Southern California in a place called Ojai. It was a beautiful retreat center. One time during a break in the sessions, we were sitting outside and just talking, and we were talking about how the Bush administration had just declared these color-coded alerts, the yellow, the orange, the red, and what was so funny is that they couldn't tell us what to do when it changed from a yellow alert, which was kind of mellow, to a more intense orange alert. And Caroline Casey, who does this wonderful radio show and is just a character in and of herself, she said, "We need a hot pink alert." And we all started laughing and said, "Yeah, hot pink alert, that's what we need." But a colleague of mine, Jody Evans, and I, who were both at the retreat, we just kept thinking about it and decided that we would do some actions calling ourselves Code Pink. Not that we'd create an organization, but that we'd go to Washington and do a couple of actions and see what came out of it. Well, it's been a wild ride as Code Pink. And in these intervening 5 years, we now have Code Pink groups all over, not just all over the country, but all over the world. In fact, places that we don't know about, they come to Washington, D.C., where we now have a Code Pink house. And we've had people come from Japan, from Italy, from South Korea, Code Pink people. I mean, we had these wonderful Japanese women that came in these pink kimonos, and they left us these beautiful pink kimonos, and they were shuffling throughout Congress with their little pink wooden shoes and their pink kimonos, and they put the pink crowns on that we wear. Would go into the hearings with us, and people looked at them like they were from outer space. But they were so wonderful and so involved back in Japan for their work in the peace movement and trying to close U.S. military bases there. And we've hooked up with women in Italy who are trying to close military bases there. And it just feels like this beautiful coming together of wonderful women from throughout the U.S. and around the world. We've become, I must say, angrier and angrier as the years have gone by, and we see that we haven't been able to affect policy. And then when we had the Democrats come into power and we thought, okay, you know, now there's a real mandate for change. They're going to pull the troops out of Iraq. And a year later, we have more troops than when the Democrats first came in. We used to say that silence is complicity. Now we say politeness is complicity. And we've become more vocal, more in the face of both Republicans and Democrats in Washington, D.C. and around the country. I think we will continue to do that until we manage to pull our troops out of Iraq and stop them from getting us into other unnecessary, illegal, immoral wars. We go into the hearing rooms. We're at just about every hearing now in Washington that has to do with Iraq, Iran, now Pakistan, Guantanamo, civil liberties issues, hearings that talk about issues that are related, like global warming or healthcare, things that we think we should be focusing on instead of these crazy wars. We have made enemies not only among the Republicans. It's interesting to hear George Bush talk about Code Pink, which he did at one of his recent speeches, or the White House spokespeople who have mentioned Code Pink several times. But the Democrats don't like us much better. In fact, Nancy Pelosi started going off on Code Pink about how we're camped out outside her home and we're so disrespectful and we don't give her even the personal space that she needs. And that's why I say now that our motto is politeness is complicity, because, you know, we don't really feel like we have to give Nancy Pelosi her time out at her lovely mansion in Pacific Heights in San Francisco, or anybody their time out during their, quote, vacations, because the Iraqi people are not getting any vacations. Our soldiers aren't getting vacations. And until they do the right thing, we're going to be on their backs, in their faces, pressuring them, whether it's at the church that they go to, or it's whether it's outside their homes, or whether it's in the halls of Congress, or their fancy parties, or their press conferences. You'll see Code Pink women and men popping up to say the truth. I am not somebody who's been, quote, schooled in civil disobedience in the sense of understanding the gradations of it. But what I feel is that when your government is engaged in a war that is so morally wrong, if you haven't gotten arrested protesting that war, you're not doing your job as a citizen of this planet. So sometimes I get arrested when we have planned for a civil disobedience. We sit in the office of John McCain and we say we're not moving because we want to protest his statements around bombing Iran that horrify us. We know we're going to get arrested. But many times we don't plan to get arrested when we do, because there is so much violation of basic freedom of speech and freedom of assembly in this country right now. We're getting arrested and sometimes at hearings for merely wearing pink. There is something now called pink profiling, where people who go into the hearings who are wearing pink immediately have a police entourage around them. As soon as we walk into Congress, they're on their walkie-talkies saying, Code Pink's in the house. The fact that I can't get into Canada now because my name is on a criminal FBI database is absolutely appalling to me. I mean, I'm the most committed, nonviolent person. And for me to be seen as a hardened criminal that's on the database of felons and sex offenders who can't be allowed into other countries because we're dangerous is a terrible violation of our basic rights.
Madea's commitment to nonviolent social action was most severely tested when General Pervez Musharraf declared emergency rule in Pakistan, attacking the leaders of Pakistan's civil society, the judges, the lawyers, the students, the women's groups, and even the journalists. Madea could not sit by without taking a stand.
The more I read, the more appalled I was, because I realized that this was done with our money, because we were giving, since 9/11, over $10 billion to the military. And they were using the military to crack down on our counterparts, the real democratic forces in Pakistan. So I decided I wanted to go there and find out what was happening and make links with this democratic movement. And I could only find one person, a man, who was willing to go with me, an active member from Code Pink Los Angeles. His name is Tighe Barig. And so we went to Pakistan and went to the rallies that the Democratic movement was holding. We went to a press conference that the U.S. ambassador was holding. And when she wouldn't take any questions, we started yelling out, why is the Bush administration still supporting the Musharraf regime? The next day after that press conference, we were kidnapped, carjacked at gunpoint by plainclothes police in one of the scariest moments of my life, and we were deported on the next plane. We got a taste of how brutal this Musharraf regime is and have been determined ever since we got back to keep supporting the democratic movement in Pakistan. And of course, in the wake of the death of Benazir Bhutto, more determined than ever to cut off funds to this brutal military regime.
We want to impeach George. That's what we're going to do. We're going to impeach George. That's what we're going to do. We're going to impeach George. That's what we're going to do. And impeach Dick Cheney, too. Because impeachment's on the table all over this land. Impeachment's on the table.
You've been listening to the voices of Code Pink outside the United States Congress, bringing their unique brand of civil disobedience and political theater to the halls of government in Washington, D.C. Medea Benjamin continues to dedicate herself to that work.
Since we created Code Pink, I have never been happier in my life during such a miserable time, because I have such a wonderful community of women and men to scheme with, plot with, organize with, go to jail with, get out of jail with, travel with, sing with, dance with. We love to sing. We sing a lot. We love to dance. We love to get dressed up in costumes. If you saw the Code Pink house, the basement is full of costumes. We have our gowns that have sashes saying, I miss America, I miss habeas corpus. We have our Code Pink police uniforms that we take out with our crime scene tape to go to places like the White House. We do a lot of humorous kinds of actions. We really believe that even in the most serious situations, joy and humor can sometimes be the best way of communicating. Sometimes we're a little too grim, a little too serious, a little too preachy, and we've got to lighten up a bit and show people that doing things to make the world a more peaceful place can actually be a lot of fun.
Here's Medea singing a Code Pink original, Don't Bomb Iran.
Don't bomb, bomb, don't bomb Iran. Don't bomb, bomb, don't bomb Iran. Oh, John McCain, he is insane. John McCain, he'll wipe out a generation if he gets to bomb the nation of Iran. Don't bomb Iran.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Today's program is a special collaboration with the Women Rising radio series, a project of Crown Safira Productions. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit us on the web at radioproject.org.
Ele me bota com o meu bebê. Gente, gente, pesilha é a lama. Pesilha é a pia.
In 1960, Burma, now also called Myanmar, was considered to be a rich and cultured country in Southeast Asia. But the country fell into the grip of a corrupt military dictatorship and became an impoverished, dangerous place to live. In the 1970s, a democratic movement arose in Burma, headed by leaders of the civil society and university students. One of those students was Saw Myat Mar, a daughter of a Burmese military official. In her first act of civil resistance, Saw Myat Mar helped to kidnap the dead body of UN Secretary General U Thant.
When I was young, we have a very good privilege and our lives are very good, because my father is a military officer. But when I started in university, you know, the very first time I involved in the politics is U Thant. He's a general secretary in the United Nations. When he passed away, the government is not acknowledge him or no pay respect for nothing. The government is supposed to be giving the state funeral. And then when the body is brought back to Burma, nobody go and come and pick up him, and only the students. The students, what we do is we kidnap the body to bring inside the university compound, and we were doing our duty to going to do the funeral procession for ourselves. I was there in the university grounds 3 days and two nights. My father didn't know where I was. Everybody were looking for me. And one my uncle come to the university and they said, so what you doing? Come up. Come get home. Come on, your mom is so worried about you. I said, no, I want to stay here with the, you know, students. You know, I don't want to go. My father was so angry with me at that time because he's still in the service in the military, but he not say anything to me at that time. For the first time, I was questioned by the government in my home. Other students, my friends who were together in Utan funeral, they were arrested by the government. I'm the only one not arrested. They sent it to jail. Why not me? Thanks to my dad, he was a military officer, but I'm not satisfied with that. After that, I was married, and then my life is a very simple housewife. I married my husband in 1979, and my life is very easy life. But one day, me and my husband were walking back home. We saw the three military trucks driving in front of the general hospital. What has happened is the doctor and the nurses, they have no medicines and they have no blood at all. So what they're doing is they write it down the red color or maybe blood on the white bed sheet. They are written words like, the army needs to protect the people, not to kill their own people. There has no medicine, there is no blood at all. Stop killing. That poster is, you know, hanging from inside the hospital compound. We were in the left side on the road, and the nurses and the doctors on the right side in front of the general hospital. While they're passing by, the soldiers, they're shooting all the people like on the right-hand side first and then turn to the left. We were so lucky at that time we was not shot by the soldiers. I don't know how many people die. A lot of people were, you know, lying down on the roads. I was crying a lot. My husband is crying a lot. We were so angry on that day. Then I decided, me and my husband decided, we are going to fight to get the freedom and democracy in my country.
Saw Myat Mar became outraged when the Burmese government tried to crack down on the outpouring of support for pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi on the occasion of her mother's death. Both of Aung San Suu Kyi's parents were popular figures in Burma. Her father, a general, was assassinated when Aung San Suu Kyi was only 2 years old. She became a revered leader in Burma and has been recognized worldwide with a Nobel Peace Prize for her unstinting work on behalf of the Burmese people. Saw Myat Mar became part of Aung San Suu Kyi's inner circle, creating regional groups of the National League for Democracy and helping students organize massive grassroots protests.
At that time, what happened is there is an uprising happened in 1988. It's a political crisis happening. And Aung San Suu Kyi has come along with students and involved in the politics. And we are the ones who backing Aung San Suu Kyi. And she founded the NLD Party, National League for Democracy, in 1991. We are the ones who first to assign as NLD members, the very first group. Me and my husband were there. We signed up. The main office is open at Aung San Suu Kyi house at that time. I always, wherever I have a chance, I used to go there, and then I was a volunteer at doing for them. I just helping because I love her. She's so beautiful. She's so kind-hearted, always smiling, and always the way she talks is very slowly and then very, just like a whispering, you know. Everyone see her and then, oh, she's so beautiful, you know. That's how we help it. But for that help, I have to serve for 3 years with hard labor in the jail.
Saw Myat Mar and many others who helped establish the Burmese National League for Democracy were imprisoned for their courageous dedication to the struggle for freedom in Burma. Their leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, was aware of their suffering and spoke of it in a film called Inside Burma, Land of Fear.
There were times when I was worried for my colleagues. Those of my colleagues who were put in prison in Burma, their families were also insecure. But I don't think we're the first people who have had to face an uncompromising and brutal power. I think we depend chiefly on our own people, on the will of our own people. I am convinced that Burma is heading for democracy because of what the people want and because of what all those who want democracy are doing.
When she was released from prison, Saw Myat Mar visited with Aung San Suu Kyi and was inspired by her leader's strength.
It is very tough. I will say it is very tough. When I come out from jail, I cannot walk. My lower body cannot move. I come out with the stretcher. I cannot work, and I've taken a hospitalized for like 1.5 years, and I stay home. And the government come and bribe us. So you want to like the telephone line, you want to get a car, you like to get this land. They're going to give whatever we want, but don't involve in the politics. Don't go to see the Aung San Suu Kyi. Stay away from her. So, you know, after I released and I can walk again, I start going again to the Aung San Suu Kyi. I just love her and I just help. I know she's going to be a great leader. She's the one and only and the precious lady for us. I don't think another leaders like the Aung San Suu Kyi. That's why I want the Aung San Suu Kyi to be released as soon as possible.
The Burmese government has tried to silence Aung San Suu Kyi by keeping her under a brutal house arrest for many years and recently banning her from running in the 2010 Burma elections. The government has also continued to hound Saw Myat Mar and her husband, destroying their business, arresting and interrogating them, and ultimately driving them out of Burma. Saw Myat Mar and her family came to the United States. She has joined forces with U.S. activists, such as the Burmese American Democratic Alliance, to obtain the freedom of Aung San Suu Kyi and thousands of monks and other political prisoners held in her country.
I just go gathering with other American people who involved in the Burmese politics, who helped to get the democracy, who's supporting to my country. I always talk to with them, just my little English. I try to talk to them. And I want to say, please support my country. And it's very helpful that Mrs. Bush is asking to release the Aung San Suu Kyi and to be have a freedom and democracy in our country. She's the only one, you know, speak up as a woman, as a mother, to support my country. I wish the Aung San Suu Kyi to be released as soon as possible. We need her support. And political prisoners are in a very dangerous situation. This is my point. Release the Aung San Suu Kyi and the political prisoners. We're going to fight to get freedom and democracy in my country.
That's it for this Women's Desk edition of Making Contact. These profiles of international changemakers were co-produced with Lynn Feinerman's Women Rising radio series, a project of Crown Safira Productions. You can learn more about the work of these courageous women at radioproject.org. If you'd like to order a CD of this program, our toll-free number is 800-529-5736. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Additional audio courtesy of Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, John Pilger, David Monroe and Bullfrog Films, and Angel of Peace from MFG. Special thanks to Sharif Abdel Kaddous of Democracy Now! Stephanie Welch is production engineer, Lisa Rudman executive director, Peggy Law is our founding director, senior producer Tina Rubio, intern Andrew Stelzer, volunteers Ron Rucker and Dan Turner, and I'm your host, Sandina Robbins.